Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Trust over 40 years of experience providing innovative pension solutions. Zurich Corporate Pensions. Visit zurichcorporate.ie to learn more.
Drive Time on RTE Radio 1 with Sarah McInerney and Cormac O'Hara.
Now, you're welcome back to the programme. How long do feelings of grief need to persist before it should be treated as a mental illness? Is it right to classify feelings of grief as a mental illness at all? These are just some of the questions raised when prolonged grief was recently added to the new edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. Well, Dr. Ursula Bates is a clinical psychologist and recently retired, I believe, from palliative care from Our Lady's Hospice in Blackrock in Dublin. She's here with me in studio to clear up these concerns about prolonged grief being classified as a mental illness. Dr. Ursula Bates, you're very welcome to the programme.
Great. Well, thank you very much. And thank you for the opportunity to speak to this, because it's a great question, because it's not just feelings of grief. Of course, for many years afterwards and maybe at anniversaries, people feel sad and yearning and they miss their loved one. But it's when it's a disability. It's when it is interfering significantly either with people's work life or with people's other relationships. Okay. That's when it becomes a problem. And this has been a 5-year battle in the States to get this accepted. So two people who work very closely with bereaved people, Holly Pergerson and a lady called Kathy Shear, found that they were getting referred people under the label of depression that actually were simply deeply bereaved. So they fought very hard to get this brought in as a way of helping other clinicians discriminate. Is the person in front of me depressed, or do they have panic disorder, or could they be bereaved?
Bereaved and suffering, yeah, grief still. You might describe to people then, or explain to people what, or give us a definition, if it exists, of what prolonged grief is, as opposed to just normal, inverted commas, grief.
Well, normal grief comes and goes. So it comes and goes in waves. Good days, bad days. As time moves on, more good days than bad days. But prolonged grief disorder is where there is a persistent yearning, a persistent thoughts around missing the person, missing the role the person played in your life, persistent difficulties with either making new relationships or functioning at work, and a kind of overall preoccupation. So the person's living in a cloud, mm-hmm, of grief for long, long periods of time.
For how long does it have to be classed as prolonged?
Generally, as clinicians and people who work in this area, we're very tolerant of up to a year after the loss. Lots of things happen for people. They have lots of emotional difficulties, lots of ups and downs. If something is still happening a year later, and we're talking about maybe 4-10% of the bereaved population, so we're talking about a tiny group, mm-hmm, where, and I mean persistent difficulties like perhaps still feeling you have to wear the dead person's clothes, perhaps still feeling that you have to go to the grave every day. It's that kind of persistent issue.
Am I right to be offended on behalf of some people who may feel that type of grief even after a year or even much longer? And when I say offended, I don't mean there's anything wrong with people who have a mental illness. There simply is not. It's just something to deal with. But is prolonged grief, could it be okay in certain situations if the grief is perhaps complicated or toxic, or if the person who left or who died played a central role in that person's daily routine, say?
Yeah, I mean, we're all unique and every loss is unique, but it raises a flag. And I suppose all the DSM would be hoping for is that that person might go and talk to somebody at that point in time. And that could be their GP, it could be funeral directors are often very helpful, but it does raise a bit of a flag. And I suppose we'd all love that it might open a door, mm-hmm, for somebody. And I myself have slight trouble with suggesting that it's a mental illness in any way, because that's not language I think we try to use in psychology. We would see the DSM really as a way that professionals communicate with each other, so it's written in quite technical language.
The DSM is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual.
Yeah, okay. The big manual. Yeah, yeah. It's kind of a a shorthand for professionals to talk to each other and understand the complexity of people.
Okay, so it's not meant to be offensive in any way. It's meant to be helpful, to help people out. Because what struck me is, do you know the Kessler and Kubler-Ross, when they wrote and researched grief, I think, and they broke it into, I think, five different stages or so on. So what you're describing here, or what they're describing, I should say, is maybe that I think there is acceptance is the last stage of it. I think there might be depression in there. Are they saying that people are just stuck somehow in the depression stage? Is that what it is?
Stuckness is a very good... Well, they can be stuck anywhere. People can be stuck in shock if it's a very tragic loss. So they can get frozen in time at the very beginning. Or people can get stuck emotionally, or people can get stuck cognitively. And really, the research in the area has moved on a lot from Kubler-Ross.
Okay.
So we now think of grief in a multitude of different ways, you know, that different things feed it.
Okay, so if somebody is listening to us and they say, okay, I see some of this in myself, perhaps, or in a relative, how is this helpful, or how should it be used to help the person along?
I suppose I'd like to feel that it's a very respectful acknowledgement that yes, people have got to trust themselves. If you're a number of years since a loss and you just feel that life, like somebody said to me today, life is in black and white. Since I lost my loved one, life no longer has any colour in it. They're the kind of things that we have to be very respectful of. And I suppose it's about trying to meet that in a way that hopefully is constructive. I mean, the advantage to the work that they've done is that there is now a treatment approach for prolonged grief disorder. So instead of just listening to somebody and offering support, there's a very structured way now of going about it. You know, walking somebody back through the death in a very safe situation, looking at where they might get stuck, looking at what they're avoiding, and looking at all this thinking that's going on in their minds.
Well, I hope our conversation helps somebody somewhere along the line. Dr. Ursula Bates, clinical psychologist, thank you very much indeed for joining us in the programme.